Up next on JusticeFound.org, Rule in Washington interviews the Welfare Queens. Today on the Worker Justice Talk, they discuss life on welfare, being disenfranchised, and finding their voice through art.
This is Roland Washington for JusticeFound.org, the community worker on KPOO San Francisco. I'm sitting here with the Welfare Queens.
Small W, capital Q.
Tell me who the Welfare Queens are.
Tiny.
All right, my name is Lori McElroy, trade name Ecstasine. I am a digital resistor, a super baby mama, a welfare queen.
I'm Junebug, gangsta homemaker, radical teacher, and mama to Solomon, welfare queen.
I'm going to say my slam bio. Incarcerated for crimes of poverty, living on this earth to save the world through the word, daughter of D, for without whom there be no me, mama, single mama, pobreza to divorcio, welfare queen.
Yeah, today we're having a report back on a trip we took, but we really want to talk about welfare
That's
queens right now.
Super baby mama, digital resistor, poverty scholar, welfare queen, my name is Vivian.
The welfare queens are poets, actress, activists.
Aristocats.
Okay. And you guys just had a theater production a week ago.
The Brava Theater.
Advocates, there we go. At the Brava Theater.
It was hella dope. Kicked it down about basically five generations of poverty and racism in America KKK that impact poor mamas and poor parents. We told the stories through our histories and her stories of our mamas and grandmas and our lives.
My name's Vivian, and I'm doing a story about my grandmother's life and my mother's story about how in the early 1950s and the late 40s, families were disenfranchised by the welfare system if there wasn't a man living in the house or if you separate or divorce. My grandmother was working two jobs with six kids by herself, and one morning on that fateful day in 1950, the police, the law enforcement, along with social services showed up at their one-room hotel in San Francisco in the Tenderloin and took the kids because their simple message was that there was no man in the household. Therefore, it was a broken household and they could do better by raising the kids through the system. So that's just one example and one generational issue around the welfare.
And then do you articulate this in spoken word or...
We play it out in theater, theater mode. I actually narrate, and it's a mind behind a white screen, the actions of what went down.
Okay, my name is Lori McElroy, trade name Ecstasine. My story in the Welfare Queens is about an experience that occurred, that happened to me. I was in San Francisco General Hospital, and I was there at an emergency basis, and I got treated absolutely horribly by the emergency room staff because they didn't, I got put in the indigent ward, so they didn't think I had any health care, so they didn't recognize my humanity. They just treated me like a dog, and I wrote about that.
Give me an H, give me an E, give me an L-L-T-H. Healthcare.
Healthcare.
Slip on the floor, get hit by a car, step into a door, any flesh torn. Start lying, ponder, dying if you're a poor. But that's just typical because we live in a society where it's a privilege to be healthy and everything about money.
Well, I'm Junebug and I'm a welfare scholar. And my scenes that I created using various artistical mediums to deliver a message about the daily experiences that I deal with dealing with the welfare system, being able to access childcare, being able to access education, and feeling like it's this constant pimp and hoe ideology and strategy that's constantly being used, that you are always in economic limbo, and that the welfare system was not designed to help eradicate poverty.
But you know, one of the icons for labor is Rosie the Riveter.
Rosie the Riveter, 1940s and 50s, this is Vivian speaking. My grandmother, whose name is Rosalia, Rosie was a riveter here in San Francisco. And even with that said, she was a Rosie the Riveter when the welfare system decided to play daddy to her kids and take them out of her home.
because single mamas and poor mamas were considered deviant, be they workers or be they not workers, which is one of the things that we took down. We're not just talking about welfare system. We're talking about pimpology. We're talking about the way the system pits the poor against the poorer and the way that sets up and creates mythologies about poor women and poor parents in general. Who was considered deserving versus undeserving of care, of health care, of aid, of free food, of even education? These are the kind of things we're breaking down. So we're coming from the welfare system as a concept or a construct, but we're really looking at how this society sets up a deficit model in its care of poor people in general.
Also, I just this is Lori, and I want to say that I want to point out that Rosie the Riveter, the real Rosie the Riveters, when they worked in the factories to produce arms and weapons for World War II, they the government paid for their child care. The government subsidized their child care completely. If you were a woman who worked in one of those factories, especially a white woman, I'm not sure about any of the other ones. But any of the other races. But if you were a woman and you worked in those factories, you could get completely subsidized child care. You could get child care at any hour of the day. If you worked the night shift, you could drop your child off, and in the morning you could pick your child up with a hot meal, with a hot meal and groceries.
Right.
And you could bring your kids home, and you could have quality time, and then bring the child back when you were ready to go to work. So for things that the government deems necessary or deems worthwhile, like going to war, like waging a war, we can have all that support. But if it's just for raising our families, then no, we can't have the support. We're criminalized. We're demonized. We're called welfare moms and welfare queens.
This is Vivian here. On the Rosie the Riveter, I just want to piggyback on what Lori McElroy is saying on that. My grandmother was a Rosie Riveter, but she was Mexican and a single parent, and she couldn't reveal any of that while being a Rosie Riveter. So her race and her class and her circumstance, she didn't get the child care and the free groceries. She still went to the church and asked the priest for food money every month. And so with that said, there still was an issue. She was out there working just as hard as those white women who had husbands who had the child care and the privilege of the groceries, and yet she couldn't access that because of her race and class.
And I want to throw down that my grandma, who I talk about in the play as well, poor Irish immigrant gypsy, as she was called by her domestic violence batterer husband, was an immigrant who husband wouldn't sign the papers for her, so she couldn't actually even apply for the Rosie the Riveter stuff, which was her generation too, and she tried to. But as an immigrant woman who was actually underage as well, they wouldn't let her be part of that labor force. She then went out and did 3 jobs and was therefore deemed unfit by the system to care for her own children. And that's one thing. The other interesting thing, though, is whoever those Rosies were, and you probably know this, is the minute that the men came back, they were considered redundant. And all those bling-bling things that Lori just kicked down that we look at as a non-deficit model, that we're looking at as a pro model, were taken away from them, even those white ladies. And no more child care, no more groceries, and in fact, no more jobs.
That's right. That's right.
So I take offense at that Rosie the Riveter imaging, because that was BS. It was a minute of privilege.
I think that there's a system in place that makes you insane. Like I said earlier, the welfare system wasn't designed to eradicate poverty. In fact, what it does is it constantly is making you try to reach out for something that you can't ever own, that you can't ever grab, that you can't ever maintain. It's a constant battle, always having to bring in repetitive documents just to maintain your status of getting the little bit that you get, and just maintaining that little bit that you get. There's always these plans to sign, or these ways that you have to work under the table, even perhaps, just to be able to make it economically.
We're talking about being dependent and being reactive. Mm-hmm. So can you guys give me some examples of the proactive things that you are doing at this moment?
Well, I'd like to respond to that. My name is Lori, and I think that's what Welfare Queens, that's what the project is all about. The project is about cultural work, is about proactive cultural work. We want to get into the minds of the people who see or hear about our project, and we want to show them reality as we see it. We want to show them reality as we experience it, and we want to change their minds. We want to change their minds and educate them about our experience, which I think, which in my opinion, is the experience of many, many, many women around the country and around the world, you know, with regard to poverty and child raising, and not just women, men too, you know, and children.
And one of the things that we do, I like to say, combat against oppressive forces is through art, because to me it's a way to build community, it's a way to combat against oppression, and it helps us to heal. These things have traumatized us from generation to generation. It still sticks with us. The shame, the conditioning of shame, the conditioning of criminalization, the conditioning of embarrassment, the fact that you're not good enough because of your economic status, you're then either getting your children taken away, or you're being taken away, or you're being told to work somewhere or volunteer somewhere. I mean, volunteerism is not for me, because I can't afford to volunteer. And these are some of the BS requirements that you deal with in a system where you're trying to get a little bit extra, as you call it, or a little bit of, they call, benefits to be able to further make it. I mean, poverty is purposely done. And I didn't choose poverty. Poverty chose me. And my whole life I've had to feel bad about it. And I don't think that's right. And I don't think that I should have any less access to somebody else to getting my basic rights met. I'm not talking about, oh, I want a tight fit, or I want like a matching car for each outfit. I'm saying that, look, you know, the rent is so high. I'm saying that to eat healthy is high. I'm saying that transportation, I mean, we're just talking about basic everyday things. And the welfare system, it provides some kind of stone, but it doesn't give you all the tools to navigate along this journey. And I feel that we need to really redo the welfare system straight up, because, you know, we got timelines on it. We got, you know, these budgets coming up on the Senate level saying that they're going to sanction children. I mean, this is horrible. I mean, if poverty is purposely done, then why would you punish somebody for something that is purposely being done, and you're not providing something that's going to be a long-term solution? It's a band-aid treatment. You're constantly keeping somebody in economic limbo. And I'm going to explain something like the state median income, for instance. I think it was about a year, 2 years ago, where, let's say you're a woman who is, or a man, and you're in the, you know, you went through the CalWORK system, and you got hired by a corporation that was a part of that job hiring process that CalWORK tries to hook you up with. And you're working there, and let's say, well, you know, you've been working for X amount of time, we want to give you a pay raise. Well, now you can't afford to take that pay raise because it jeopardizes you maintaining your child care subsidy. So you're caught in economic limbo. You're trying to move up economically to be able to live comfortably, and you're struggling with that, because if you do, then you lose you lose access to being able to have child care for your child, which then reassures that you'll be able to work. Now, the state median income was frozen for like about 7 years, and then it got unfroze, and it's improved a little percentage, but things like that have to be monitored, state median incomes, to really review the economic regionally and the percentage of what the income guidelines are, if it's not coinciding with the actual economy, the actual cost of living.
I just wanted to say, Vivian, here, Welfare Queen, I wanted to say, as far as proactive goes with the Welfare Queens project, what we do is we help educate people through our art and performance. We have a lot of large sign scrims that have a lot of messages, a lot of policy issues, a lot of visuals, a lot of different elements that really put people into the perspective of welfare and also change their perspective and their assumptions of what welfare is and what people do on welfare. And we sometimes even use the stuff against us, you know, imagery and stuff that people use against low-income families as part of an educational process to make that happen, as well as the integration of the book readings about social justice, song, artistry, and that perspective, and along with the visual aids and then the actual performance itself. And within that performance, there's a lot of familiar songs that have been hits, songs, you know, like things from the Wizard of Oz or Elvis songs or whatnot that we use to really bring in that connotative messaging on a more media level, but yet an educational and informative level. And this in itself is proactive, as well as the campaigning we'll do, like petition signings and such, and selling different literature and stuff that will help fundraise to make our efforts even go farther. So there's this whole sort of combination of you know, resources and information there that is really pushing us into a more proactive state, and it really opens up people's perspective and perception of what welfare is all about and what welfare moms and children really do deal with out there.
Because let's face it, you know, media is powerful in this country. I mean, we're speaking on a podcast, you know, and that's one of our big things that we focus on at Poor Magazine, the kind of a parent organization to the Welfare Queens. Media is powerful. People don't tend to watch C-SPAN or the Senate hearings, you know, or dry discussions on welfare reform. They want to see something that's going to engage them. They want to see something that's going to entertain them. You know, I mean, I can rail about bread and circuses on the Jerry Springer show, but people watch that, you know, and people hear that, you know. So we want to bring people something that entertains, but something that entertains and informs them.
And I wanted to throw down really quick on that. This is Tiny. There's more than one way to make a political statement, an educational model, and a message. One of the whole points about the cultural projects at Poor Magazine and our whole use of arts and media, as Lori articulated, is that we are bringing these crucial, damaging, serious political issues and statements and messages into a different forum. They're entertaining. We do have dance, music, art, and we also have extremely powerful messages that come from the stories and histories of our lives.
Information is knowledge, and knowledge is power.
This poem is in honor of mothers. Homeless mothers and poor mothers.
Low-wage mothers and no-wage mothers.
Welfare mothers and three-job working mothers.
Immigrant mothers and incarcerated mothers.
In other words, this poem is in honor of INS'd with, CPS'd with.
CPS'd with, and most of all,
System-S'd with mothers.
Welfare queens!
Super baby mamas!
Yeah.
Okay, this is Poor Magazine. You can check us out on the web at www.poormagazine.org. That's www.poormagazine.org.
Are you a small business or entrepreneur? You know you need to be online, but you don't know where to start? Come to RedTap. We'll help you with all of your online needs. Everything from website design to e-commerce site setup to e-marketing. We'll speak to you in your language and help you build a successful online business. Give us a call at 415-285-0585. RedTap is located in the heart of the Mission District at 1360 Valencia Street and is a proud sponsor of the JusticeFound.org podcast.
You've been listening to the Worker Justice Talk podcast edition with Roland Washington. The Worker Justice Talk is a production of JusticeFound.org and RedTap. Most editions are recorded live at the studios of RedTap, located in the heart of the Mission District in San Francisco. The Worker Justice Talk is available online at JusticeFound.org
and for download on iTunes. The post-production audio engineer was me, David J. Kortzmeyer. Join us next time for another edition of the Worker Justice Talk.